But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
It's Scott Brennan of Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, joined by Michael Berlew.
Hello, everybody.
It's really nice to be back, Michael Berlew.
Yeah, it's been a while, bro.
You know, it's been a while, but like what we do is like, well, we record episodes like bang, 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 bang. You know, like episode, like three, we recorded three in that one night.
Yeah.
So we released them, so it seems like we're up to date and everything like that, but we're really not. Like next week, I'm going to be putting out the Brian Einerson episode that we recorded, which is great. But that happened over like 3 weeks, so it seems like we've done a lot, but we haven't. But we are. But
yeah, we were going to meet up last Friday and I couldn't make it. So
so we are back, and that's the thing about like with the podcast. If you don't do it like every week or every whatever biweekly or something, you feel like, oh, all this stuff that's happened, I don't know what to talk about, you know? But anyway, the last podcast you guys heard was with my buddy Dom Bagnuto, and this should be up hopefully tonight, if not tomorrow. And his movie goes into theaters, what's today? Today is the
18th,
so his movie goes into theaters on Saturday, so hopefully you guys enjoyed that. And, you know, that's a big thing. It's amazing. If you listen to the last podcast, it's amazing to hear how much freaking work. Like, just the guy made the film almost 5 years ago, and it's just like picture like sticking with the same material for 5 years, you know, like, and like believing in it to the point where you're, you know, you put that much. I don't know, I mean, like, I feel like making the movie is probably the easiest part. Like,
yeah, I mean, just like independent film, I mean, people just don't understand everything that goes into it. Like, I go on a site, cinemassacre.com, the angry video game nerd. He came out with a movie last year. I was down in, I think it's Pottsville, Pennsylvania, where they did the Blob.
Right.
He did one of his premieres there, but it's just incredible, like, the whole journey where you just go through each thing about, you know, cleaning up every shot, putting music behind it, reshoot, special effects. It's, people just think it's just like, read a script, tape it, and all right, we'll be good in a week.
Well, like, judging by him, I get that, like, you know, making it was the fun part, you know, getting everything in line, and all the prep that goes up to it is extremely hard, and, you know, finding the actors, finding the budget, but then making the movie, whether it's a shoot for 20 days or whatever, that's fun, you know, like, that's the directing and the acting and all that, but now it's like, I got to make some money off of this, or I want to get it out there. And, you know, how do I get it out there? Can I get it in a theater? Can I get it on Netflix? Can I get it in digital download? Like, where is the money for it? But I was happy to see he got, he mentioned on the podcast last week that he had that, Kickstarter, or I don't know if it was Kickstarter.
Some kind of fundraiser.
Some of that. And he met his goal, which is fantastic, you know, to get that. You know, I think he's told us last week that he spent $11,000 to get the movie in the Quad Cinema. Which is
something like that.
You know, that's a lot of money.
That's insane.
That's a lot of money.
On a gamble, too.
And it's just putting yourself out there. And I respect the guy so much for just, he has stuck with that film. I remember when he was making it, like the idea for it, like he put up little things. And it's amazing the process that he's been going through to do it. And I hope it goes well for him. I really do. I've seen the film. I like the film. It's clever. Like I said, I was trying to work with him on doing something. Like, maybe we can go there and do a podcast there. But we, as of now, we haven't come up with like a creative idea. We were thinking about maybe us being like salesmen from the film or something like that. Like if you see the film, like we actually almost like character play. So like
we could be Mad Men.
Yeah, so people would kind of think like, what the hell are they talking about? But then like for us to do a radio show, then go in, watch the movie, and I don't know how many people would come out and talk to us afterwards. So we were still – there's a slight chance it could still happen, but I doubt it. But I do wish him the best. And he is
– absolutely.
Like I said, he is our number one fan. He has listened from day one, and he has he'll text me during the week about, oh, I love the episode. It's really fun. He commutes on the train, so he says that's a lot when he listens to it. Like –
yeah, you gotta appreciate it, and again, gotta appreciate the hard work he puts into it and all. If you go up, I'd be interested in going up and seeing it as well.
Yeah, I thought maybe even just going just to support and going to see it.
He's gonna be there for the 5:30 shows, was it? Or
I think there's three shows a day for 6 days. It starts the 20th. I think it's out till the 26th, which is the Thursday.
Yeah.
So, and he said he's having, like, each night there's someone talking about the film. So, whether it's an actor, the editor. So, it's pretty cool. And, Dom, if you're listening, you're still greasy and Italian. But we do wish you the best with that.
Can't get 100% with everything.
Yes, know. Yes. You're still Italian. So I'm sorry. other podcast news. If you checked our Twitter, which we now have. I'm not even used to saying that yet. But if you follow us at VS Comedy, that's the only handle they had. They wouldn't give me Verbal Shenanigans. It was too long.
Hmm.
So at VS Comedy, and they wouldn't give me Shenanigans Podcast. It was too long.
They're very strict on the numbering, you know, with the characters.
Like at really Verbal Shenanigans would be nice.
I just don't get it. To this day, I still can't figure out how Twitter got popular.
Yeah, I hate Twitter, to be honest. I don't like it. It's like, I don't know. It's like very simpleton kind of like, I don't know. And like, it's all about just hashtagging people to see it. Like, I don't like that whole thing.
And it's weird how like some popular person, you're just sending almost like a personal message to them. Hey, I know. Look at me. I know 50,000 other people are doing the same thing, but look at me. Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big fan of the old Twitter, but anyway, we have a Twitter, which
you should follow,
which we would like you to follow.
Mm-hmm.
But if you checked out the Facebook or the Twitter, Randy Santel had put up his video finally of the podcast of the event that we did the podcast from.
Yeah,
and Berla was the one who kind of got him to come to the place. So it's pretty cool to see. It was. Just reflecting, it was fun to see because it was a couple months after. So even just kind of remembering like how it went down was kind of fun to see. The damn dog. Okay. Before we get to Randy Santel, the damn dog. Like now we're doing the podcast upstairs. I'm trying to get my little office space here to be like more of a creative zone and like do podcasts from here. So we don't have to like set it up in the living room and hook up tables. So it's kind of permanently set up. The damn dog loves Berlo, and
yes, I do.
He loves me.
I don't know about that, Dave.
But like, he's used to being like, if I have to go upstairs, he's fine. But like, as soon as I went upstairs, I said, "We gotta wait like a half hour because he's gonna be barking and he's gonna need to calm down." And as soon as we go upstairs, I put a little gate in front of the stairs because he goes upstairs, and that's where the stupid cats eat. And he just devours the cat food in seconds, and then he smells, and he gets diarrhea. It's just a mess. So as soon as we go up, so I'm like, of course, now I'm closing doors and setting things up to try to let him up. And now he's barking to go downstairs.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
You can't please this thing. You can't please him.
He's sure like he's a not woman. Female?
Exactly.
Exactly. I owe you a Coke.
But anyway, the Randy Santel video is up, and if you just, I guess you just go to YouTube, type in Randy Santel Sabretti's, it would probably pop up. Go on our Twitter, it's on the thing. I feel like that's what I hate, like go on our Twitter and check out. But it is. We did post the link to it, and it's pretty cool because he if you listen to the episode, he did lose, but he lost in the most entertaining fashion ever. He didn't get like halfway through and give up. He got to a half a hot dog and threw up like it was with like 30 seconds left. So.
Yeah, he was trying to rush it. He always says he hates super spicy stuff. He doesn't really do those challenges. The last hot dog has ghost pepper on it, and you can tell it just wasn't working for him, and he was trying to shove it down because if he did all 30, he was going to get $1,000 worth of gift cards to give away to charity. Yep. But when the second he did the second bite, it just let loose. And because of the rules, even though he beat the last guy by 13 hot dogs, it was like, well, you vomited within 10 minutes.
And it was fun to watch because his nose is bleeding and there's people around. It was just... It was entertaining.
And he finally admitted the wasabi gave him the nosebleed. I remember that day, like, they kept on bringing up wasabi. He's like, no, no.
It's like Pete Rose in baseball. Yeah. He finally admitted it. You know? Yeah, I bet on baseball. Yeah. But, so, yeah, check that out. It's actually just fun to watch. And then his other videos are fun to watch, too. The guy is a freaking monster. But,
nice dude. Nice
trying
dude.
To get him back in the summer. So, hopefully in the summer somewhere. We'll have a rematch, I guess you can call it. But other news of the podcast before we start entertaining you, hopefully. The Dover Show. The Dover Show, Table 42, which it is Table 42 because they have a commercial on their website and it says, welcome to Table 42. And I'm like, okay, we got it right. Because someone told me it's Table 42 at an open mic. Someone's like, I know that place. It's Table 42. I'm like, well, that kind of makes sense too. Because that's a cool name.
They outsmarted themselves with the
name. But the Dover Show sold out.
Woo!
Sold out. And we added 5 seats and no sold out. So
amazing.
The room is maxed out. You know, I'm happy, a little nervous at the same time, but it's the first crack at running my own show. And it was weird because like it took months because I saw the room months and months ago and I told the guy, perfect for comedy, you don't use it. They basically use it for like, you know, people book like a
party,
like a communion party or something like that. And he finally came around one day after I asked him again. He's like, yeah, come in. And we got the things going. And it's taken like a community effort and still hopefully everything goes together. But I got a stage from Rich McDonald, who was a great comedian. A light from Rocco Romeo, who throws his own shows, good comic. Just, you know, people are helping me out and really appreciate it. But it is a great lineup. It is me, unfortunately, and Berlo, unfortunately. But after that, it really picks up. Joe Fernandez is coming down to do 10, one of my good friends. He's been on the podcast
before. Very funny guy.
Very funny guy, very good guy. Known him for over 10 years, worked with him. And then the legendary Chips Cooney, who is coming back on the podcast, which I'm very excited for because the last time, great interview, but it got rushed. I only got to sit down with him for 40 minutes. And a guy who's been in the business for probably 40 years, there's so much to talk about. And not only is he a great comedian, his life is just really interesting. Yeah. And like,
extremely nice guy, very appreciative. I mean, I've done a couple shows with him. I mean, you know, I've only done it for like a year, and I think nothing of it. I got my cute little act, but he always come up to me, Mike, you know, great job, you know, great work. It's always a pleasure working with you. I mean, this guy could literally just not even blink an eye, not say two words to me, and it's just so appreciative.
And the thing is, the guy is older, but to me, he's hilarious. He is hilarious. Like, I could define his main act is him doing like a hack magician, like terrible, terrible magic that you can see the obvious things. So he does that, but he also does another twist on it. He does a reveal where he's like, you know, the magician's union is coming after me and I got to reveal all my tricks. And he's like, first I'll do it, then I'll tell you how. And it's just so obvious. But he stays in character the whole time. And the guy, I love the guy. He's like, I don't know, like he's like me and him really get along well. So I'm excited. He's got a good following. The guy has worked with everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone. When I interviewed him, he's like, yeah, I worked with Dave Attell, and I remember when Seinfeld was coming up, and Chris Rock, I remember seeing him saying, that kid's got talent. And it's just like, to have access to a guy like that when you're an absolute nobody is amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. And he's willing to give information. I mean, that's the beautiful part about him. I mean, he just doesn't sit there, hey, nice to see you and all, yeah. Yeah, you know the business, whatever. I mean, like, he'll just sit down and tell you stuff.
And the pleasure working with him on the Johnny Watson show, which we do every Monday. He's on the show, and every Monday he does a character. He, 9 out of 10 times, like, makes me crack up.
Yeah.
He's hilarious. Like, he just goes with it, and he does ridiculous characters from Judas to Jesus, whatever. To all these, like, we always do, like, a historical guy. This week he was a polar bear. And he just cracked me up. He just takes a different twist on things. And
His best was the Bigfoot one, I always thought. Somebody comes up to you and say, you know, play Bigfoot. And you're thinking of all this, I went through my voice like this, blah, 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 and whatever. He just goes up there and says, I made it up.
Yeah, he was just like a guy like who played tricks on people for years. Like, it's just funny, and he had like a big shoe, and he's just like giggling the whole... I don't know. If you can see him, he does a different style of comedy and sticks to it, and he just tries to be funny, and he is. Yeah. He is. I love the guy. Like, I love the guy.
And like he said, he goes to like open mics just like everybody else, and he just tries out stuff, and like he tells it like it is. He's like, sometimes I go up there and there's not a single good thing about it, but the thing about comedy is you got to keep trying to find that stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't just sit back on your ego and go, oh, I'm Chips Cooney, I've done this and that. It's like, no, if I want to keep working, I got to keep thinking of stuff.
Well, and like, ego has been a big conversation we've had lately, just talking in the car and talking and like associating with other comics and whatnot. And I guess any entertainment business is an ego-driven thing, but we meet so many people that are on this same level we are, whatever, not even a level, you know, just like getting into it. And
I mean, the best way I could say, my comedy address is 000 Nothing Lane.
Yeah.
And basically, most of the people we hang out with is either living with us or within walking distance of us. There are very few that are not living in that town, so everybody should pipe down a little bit.
And it's just like, I had a great set tonight. It was amazing. And you have to tell everyone how great your set was and stuff like that. And to me, it's like, I've had good sets, but like, I critique if it's good, I'm like, oh, I could have done that better. I forgot this. And it's just that
it's good to have that great feeling after a set, but to announce it to the world and act like I'm something special because I went to this little, you know, bar show with like 10 people there and they were dying. It's like, hey, that's great. I'm glad you're getting work, blah, 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 blah. But when you put that ego into there and you start thinking, hey, I'm something special, and start putting yourself on a pedestal where it's like, instead of a special guest, you think you're a feature or you think you're a headliner. It's like, shut up.
And it's just like, you killed there, but are you killing every night? Are you getting work every week? Are people knocking down your door to get you in the room? No. Like, and like, are you out on the road in other states killing? Like, because that's a different thing, you know?
Oh, definitely.
And like, you talk to the guys like we've had pleasures talking to. It's just like, you got to take your lumps, man. Like, it's like minor league baseball. It's going to take you years before you even see the sunlight at all, you know, unless you're this superstar that somehow magically has it. You got to work your way through it and just fail and fail and fail and fail and fail, minor success and fail, and just keep going. And like, I'm happy I at least have this state of mind where I know I'm supposed to, not everything's going to go well, you know?
Well, it's kind of like you look at like the original Louis C.K. Videos, you look at the original Larry the Cable Guy, I forget his real name, but when he just performed it himself, and all what they are today, where they're superstars, and what you saw them in their first year is nothing alike. And even though you can sit back at that first year and go, hey, that ain't half bad, you know, bit or whatever, in the end, it's like that whatever that was not going to get you to the top. It's what they found out.
And it's interesting because, like, you look at these guys who have been through, you know, like guys we talked to, like Johnny Watson, Andy Hayward, Chips Cooney, mm-hmm. you know, they still have off nights and they still, you know, they've had big successes, but they're not, you know, they're accessible still. And, you know, to me, like, they got to laugh at some of these people. Like, you got to be kidding me, dude. Like, I've been at this 10, 20, 15, 30, 40 years, like in Chips Cooney's case. Like, I've seen Chips Cooney go up and not do well, but he's got that right mindset where, like, it's comedy, where it's this, it's a being. Everything depends on all the scenarios. It depends on the crowd, the night, the weather, the times, the room, the sound, the lights. Like, you could do the same material night after night, and are you killing with that material every single night? No, you're not. Like, I know you're not. Like, me and you, like, we've all had good sets where we're like, that was great. You do the same material the next night, you're bombing. No one ever.
You're almost
like,
begging them of what's going on there.
I mean, please laugh at me. Yeah. You know, like,
I mean, it's kind of like when you had your guest spot over at Scotty's. We were talking to Seymour Swan, very nice guy. He does shows over there. He's been in the business, I think, about 26 years. Man. And he, like, literally told us, like, how doing the comedy competition, it's funny how we all sit back and we think, oh, we're so clever, we're so funny. He's like, when I judge a contest, it's like, I know what the joke's going to be 9 times out of 10. Yep. And that I'm judging by, you know, your appearance, how you're presenting yourself up there.
The material.
Yeah, like, not necessarily how many laughs you get, because I'm looking to see how original you really are. And people don't get, you know, you twist a word here and there, you think you're the freaking Einstein of comedy, but you're really not.
And it's like, yeah, did you have a good set? But was it 10 minutes long? Like, can you go up there and do 20, 30? Like, I know personally right now, I would say 20 would be the max I can do and feel confident.
I mean, I might even say less than that. Yeah, right. I mean, I could do 15 fairly comfortably. 20 is a little bit pushing and all. I mean, maybe playing around. I mean, I've only done around 20 a couple times. And all. I mean, one night I felt really comfortable when I emceed, went out there with Johnny. It felt good. Then the one night that the first time we did Comedy Haunt, it was kind of like I'd trying to do 20. I was kind of like, I don't know about this. So
yeah, and it's like, not only that, like, it's like everyone, yeah, you could have 20 minutes of material, but when things are going wrong, do you know how to adjust? And because I don't, that's the thing I'm trying to work on. Like, can you jump to something else with that? That's not in your plan set. Your plan 10 minutes, or you know, with 15 minutes, whatever it is. Like, can you just move on to something else? Can you work off the crowd? Do you have something that someone says something? You have a funny conversation with the crowd member, and you have something to go with that. I don't, you know, not even, not at all. My stuff's written, you know?
Yeah, the Kings, they can pretty much go into any room. And you can blindfold them, take off the blindfold. It's like, all right, it's a Hispanic room. No problem. You know, it's not, maybe it's like, all right, I got material for this. Or I'm like, I know how to play off of this. Or let me look at that guy, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's stuff a real comedian can do. And I can honestly say, I know I'm not at that level, right. And that's what we keep on working on. That's kind of good stuff that we're saying. It's, you know, don't be full of yourself, people. Unless you're fighting Fallon for his spot on the Tonight Show, shut the hell up.
Like, you got to be battle tested. Like, you could kill in a New Jersey bar or something like that. But have you been on the road? Are you getting paid for this? Are people, like, looking for you? Or no, they're not. Like, I mean, God, take every show. Don't take any show for granted or whatever it is. Like, and always, like, I know I critique myself. Like, I've been filming or audio recording all my sets, and I'll sit down and be like, ugh, you know, like, I almost hate everything. I'm like, ugh, you know, that was bad. Or, like, there's maybe two or three that I have that I'm like, I really like that set. Like, that was good. That was fun. But I was going to bring up the guest spot that I did at Scotty's a couple weeks ago, and I had a learning lesson right on stage. I I wrote this new material, and I love the material. In fact, I think it, in the near future, it will be probably my set, like my 10-minute set or whatever. But I went up. I opened. I was having a great time with the audience, and I felt good. I felt great. Like, people were laughing, and like, and at that time, the host was a little down, so I felt like I brought the energy up in the room, and I was on cloud nine. And I get to one joke, and instead of like kind of talking myself through it and being in the moment, I tried to go on like rote rehearsal. Like, I this is the words I say, and I froze. Mm-hmm. I literally went, and this is what she said. Pause. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I said it again.
Yeah.
And this is what she said. And I literally went, oof, I forgot my line. And like, people, like a good, like they were a great audience. They were kind of like, haha, like laughing with me. But like, as a comedian performer, that's like the worst feeling in the entire world. And like the rest of the set, like the next 2 minutes was terrible. And then I felt like I got them back a little bit at the end. But it's like, even this 10-minute set, 5.5, 6 minutes felt so good. And it's just one little element, one forgotten word, like a 5-word sentence, threw me off so bad. And like, that's how I know I'm not ready. I can't adjust to that, like forgetting a joke. I'm the pros forget jokes all the time, but and it's more about that living in the moment kind of thing. Like I talked with Joe Fernandez on the way down to middle Pennsylvania, and he was just talking about like being in the moment and kind of reacting to things and stuff like that, and you know, calming down. And that's what I got to work on. Like,
yeah, I know.
And now it's not like a nervous thing. It's more of like I have expectations for myself kind of thing. Like, this is what I want to deliver. And if I don't, it pisses me off. Because I don't think I'm really that nervous anymore to go on stage. It's more like I get hyped up and I'm like, I can't wait to get on there. And if something goes wrong, then I'm pissed off. Like, I don't know. This is an interesting thing to think about. And like I said, comedy is this living being. It's just everything goes into everything. People come into the show. They had a terrible commute. It was a shitty day. Like, everything goes into that. You know.
Yeah, a lot of people came because there was going to be big snow the next day, so they changed their plans and everything.
Yeah, but everything goes into that. The diversity of the crowd, the willing to laugh, the tightness of the crowd. Mm. It's just this energy that is alive. Comedy is alive.
It's really like a team effort, and like you cannot. It's if the crowd goes in there and they're not looking to laugh, it's near impossible to get them to start going. I mean, we've seen with like the small shows we did with down in Union with with those people who just they pretty much sat on their freaking hands the entire night. I mean, if you got a chuckle, you had an incredible night that
night. If you got a hee, like you were good. But it's just like I could talk about this for like hours, and I don't even have a lot of experience. That's why it's always nice to like pick the brains of people who been through hell and back.
I mean, even talking to like the guys we've seen before, like talking to Gene and even Seymour, they almost kind of laughed. I mean, you got off stage. I was telling you, you were pretty pissed off about missing the line, and they kind of laughed. It's like, bro, we've all been there. I mean, it's
like I literally went to Gene and I said, dude, I'm sorry, like I missed a line and I froze up. He's like, he almost acted like he didn't even notice. Like, he was just kind of like, oh, yeah, well, it happens. You know, he's like, he did a good job. And I don't know if that's because he's just, like, friendly, but I will say half of my set, I came out, I thought I was on fire at the beginning. And, you know, just happens.
I think Gene is a pretty honest guy. I mean, I don't think he would tell you. I mean, unless you bomb, oh my God, you just.
Well, I know I didn't bomb. It was almost like a different kind of bomb in a way. Like it was like a.
You started off hot and then you kind of stumbled near the end.
Yeah, and it just shows you how it is like a muscle. It's a being able to keep it going, being able to adjust on the fly. Like yeah, you fucked up, but like make it work. Like, you know. if you're relying so hard on one line, and that's what I was, and the punchline of that joke was great, and I came back to it like in. I was so jumbled after that, like throwing punchlines from other jokes, and like it threw my mind into a loop. And it was just like I watched a setback, and I'm like, oh, can I send this 5 minutes to somebody and just delete the rest of the set? Like, but it is what it is, and you know,
yeah. I mean, everything's a learning experience, good, bad, medium. You just gotta, like we kind of talk about, you just gotta be real with yourself. Don't get too hot. Don't get too cold on yourself. Well, that's the thing.
You have a good night. Do not just run with it and be like, I'm the man or I'm the woman. You know?
But at the same time as we're talking, I mean, you have a cold night. Don't beat yourself up.
Learn from it. You know, learn from it. Tell yourself, what did I do wrong? Like, what was it, just the crowd? Because 99% of the time, it's not just the crowd.
Yeah.
It's you. You know, like, it's you have to be that good.
Yeah. Some things aren't going to work out. I mean, you've heard my say enough times. I mean, I got stuff about like buses and stuff. If I go to like Missouri, where there's like hundreds of miles between people, that joke's not going to hit.
Right.
So,
right.
You just got to know where your sets are and know where you are in comedy and keep working at it.
Yeah, it's just work. It's work, and no one understands how much work it is. And then when you're working. And your job sucks, and you got other things to do and bills to pay. It's like the writing time just shrinks to almost nothing. And then that during that time, you're tired, you're angry, you just want to eat, or you just want to watch a show and veg out. And then you wake up the next day, like, you know, that I wasted that day. I wasted that day.
I mean, that's
I didn't write a line, you know, today.
That's what really killed. I got like a super, super stressful job that keeps on. I mean, it's not just like a stressful 9-to-5 job. It's a stressful 9-to-5 job. Oh, by the way, something went down, so I'm going to call you at 10 o'clock at night when you had plans and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's something that's still a mental block in my mind. That's kind of like what we did yesterday, like doing that improv class. I mean, even like just doing the games where it just cleaned my mind where I wasn't thinking of work at that moment.
Right.
I mean, maybe I could maybe or maybe not. I could use anything that happened that day, but it kind of showed me. It's like, all right, there are ways to kind of clear your mind to get in that writing mood.
Yeah, and it's just like writing is interesting too. Like you write and you look at it the next day and you go, that sucks. You know, like, but I think that's good though. You have to be a critic of yourself. You have to have no. No, I think it's throwing the ego out the door is the key to success. Like, you have to say, like, something sucks or, you know, yeah, maybe people are right. Like, that's not good. Or maybe the audience isn't – it's not the audience's fault. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's your fault for one. Like, comedy is, like, a revealing thing not only in just your performance, but it's a revealing thing in, like, life kind of too. You have to be honest with yourself sometimes. You have to be like, yeah, I'm doing something wrong. Like – a relationship or something like that. Like, yeah, the other person might suck, but maybe there's a maybe I'm doing something too that's wrong. And it's almost, to me, it's like almost like therapy in a way. It's like, and the more personal you write, the more you kind of get it out. Like my writing style, and everyone has a different one. My writing thing is I usually, you've seen my writing, I blast it out on the page. It's always super long, but I'll be like, I got this new thing. And then we got to trim it down. Like, that's my writing style. I like to get it all out on paper and just stream of thought kind of thing. And then go in and chop, 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 chop. Like, what is your, like how do you usually go about
it? I mean, I try to get in the like, a lot of my comedy is, like, old stories in my life. So I try to, like, think of all the stuff in the joke that's in the story that I think it's funny and try to build off of it. I mean, my biggest problem when I got a ton of stories that have like funny endings. It's just my biggest thing is working on, all right, lead up to the punchline, you know, get the funny beforehand and all, you know, start thinking of the moment. And that's my biggest thing. So I mean, that's why I try to dive into like the details of what else is funny about it. It's just a moment, or you know.
Yeah So moving on a little bit, Major disappointment on this podcast.
What's that, my man?
What I'm doing is holding the jersey of my childhood idol. We started the Twitter, and I asked Berlew. We just BSing, and the logo was made by my friend Taryn. That was Supersonics logo, because that was my favorite team as a kid. And when I was a kid, I grew up like every kid, who knew nothing, liking the Bulls, liking Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. And then Sean Kemp came around, and I swear to God, the 94, 95, 96 Sonics, they made me like the Seattle Supersonics. I hated the Nets. My brother liked the Nets. And they just hated them.
They never really had a following in New Jersey. It's kind of sad. It's like, I remember the 2 years they went to the finals, and they were still begging people, mm-hmm. come to the stadium. And we almost deserved losing the Nets. I'm surprised we didn't lose the Devils, because even the Devils, they were mega hot. You can debate they were a dynasty.
You could.
And it was still kind of like, they would sell out, but it was still like the night of. We still got tickets.
The year they won the 95 Cup, the next year they were threatening to leave for Jacksonville. They were going to be the Jacksonville Cats or something like that.
Because Florida has shown they really love their hockey. Well,
we don't need to get into Florida. Florida's a disaster, and everyone from Florida sucks. So
all their sports teams.
Their sports teams suck. The people suck, and then most of the people down there are retired New Jerseyans and New Yorkers. So.
I still remember when the Miami Heat, remember when they beat the Spurs that one game. I think they were down by seven with a minute left. People were walking out of the stadium. All of a sudden, they started rallying. The people were trying to run back into the stadium. It's just you bandwagon nobodies.
So Michael Berlew, I said, we were just talking, oh, yeah, tweet Sean Kemp, just joking around,
It was Sean Kemp, Detlef, Gary Payton, and Detlef Strunk.
Yeah, my NBA Jam, my NBA Live 95 on Super Nintendo, that was my team. Benoit Benjamin, Sam Perkins, Nate McMillan. Sean Kemp gets back to us. He gets back to us. And I tweet him, after that, I got on Twitter, I'm like, oh, I'd love to do an interview with you. You were my childhood idol. He sends me his phone number. Now, I'm, ecstatic. Oh, my God, this might happen. Yeah. And we actually talk on the phone, which is cool enough, I guess. But we talk on the phone, and we set up an interview. And actually, the last two podcasts you heard were from that night where he was supposed to call. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, we just said, let's just do podcasts. He's out on the West Coast. He's actually in Seattle. And doesn't call. I got a text from him saying his daughter tore her ACL or something. Got to go to the hospital. We'll talk and reschedule tomorrow. Since that day, it's been radio silence. And I've called him about 2 to 3 times a week just saying, hey, man, just really just didn't do an interview. I'm not pushing it or anything. If you don't want to do it, just please let me know. No problem. He's let me down, man. The Rain Man. Rain Man has let me down.
Yeah. I could tell in your face. Just look at it. It's like that puppy at the pound. Yeah. It's like, oh, my God, I'm going to go to a family. And then the last minute, it's all right, stay here.
It's interesting because the one night you came over was the night I got the show booked at Table 42.
Yeah.
And Sean Kemp said he was going to be on the podcast. And I had drunk. I had drank 7 beers. So I was happy. I was just so ecstatic. Life was good for once. And I was this is awesome. This is going to boost the podcast until I get some listeners from a completely different market, a sports market.
Yeah.
And he hasn't called me back. And I keep leaving him. And it's weird because he was communicating with me back and forth.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing about it. He gave you his number pretty much that day we followed him.
Yeah. And I don't even know if maybe an agent's in his head saying don't do it or something like that. But it's so weird.
We were doing all kind of research about it. I was sending you.
I have a list of questions in this desk drawer over here.
I was sending you videos. I wanted to talk about the time there was a video. He was playing this. the Kings, and he blocked Oliver Miller. And Oliver Miller was so pissed, he tried to grab a chair and throw it at him during the game. And, I mean, that's just so cool.
Yeah, and just a dunk contest and playing Michael Jordan in the finals. And
my favorite one was the story about how when he was in Cleveland, apparently there was a story he was late for the plane ride because he said his dog fell asleep in front of his car.
Yep.
I just wanted to find out if that was real or what was his thing.
I had all these.
What kind of dog was it?
I had all these questions about the hardships in his life. And like now he has a son. And the other, a couple of nights before, him and Gary Payton's son played against each other. And that was a big letdown. So, Sean, if you're listening, we want you, baby. We need you.
Scott, why don't you go hippo guy here? Huh?
Well, hippo guy, we are in communications with the hippo guy. Just trying to iron out a time. So I got an email this week, so the dream is still alive.
A lot of people are disappointed. We got to get back with Cinema Snob. He hasn't contacted us in a while.
Yep. But anyway, Michael Berlow.
Yes, my friend.
Super Bowl Sunday.
Intriguing evening.
Quite an evening.
Not a lot of football involved.
No, a lot of balls involved.
Yes, yeah.
Months before, Johnny Watson had told me on Super Bowl Sunday, I'm getting booked for a comedy show. It's all these women who... instead of watching the Super Bowl, book like a male review.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that sounds hilarious. Yeah. And
well, it's to factor into it. It was at a female strip club, but on Super Bowl Sunday, they do a male review.
Right. So he told me, I said, oh, I'm interested, whatever. Mm-hmm. And like, I would just mention it time to time. And it turned out, you know, he's like, oh, you guys want to come? And I had nothing really going on the Super Bowl other than going down to the local clubhouse, which is a good time. But we said, well, go, you know, this could be an experience.
Thank you. I think you were correct in that thought process.
So we get there. It's called the Platinum.
Platinum Plus.
Platinum Plus Lounge or something like that, whatever. It's a straight up gigantic strip club. Mm-hmm. Huge. In the middle of Pennsylvania. And we get in, and we're there alone for quite a while. And when we go in, the guy comes with this, hey, no guys allowed in here, only girls tonight. And we're like, look, we're the comedy act or whatever. Like, so we get in there, and the first thing we see is a poster of like a dude.
Chiseled
dude, like pants halfway down kind of. And it's like Hunkamania. Blah, 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 blah. And then at the bottom it says, like, comedy with Johnny Watson at, like, 8 o'clock or whatever, 7 o'clock or something like that.
It was supposed to be 6, if I recall. We were there, like, at 5. You know, we were figuring we'd hang out there, figured there'd be girls there dancing, you know, enjoy the night.
Right.
Figure they had plenty of TVs, figure you can, like, watch the pregame for the Super Bowl. But we walk in there, and there's literally nobody in there. Nothing. Not a dancer, not...
Nothing. And only like waitresses and a gay waiter. And the waitresses look like they've been on meth all day long. Yeah. They are shot out.
Like some of these places, like the waitresses are almost as good looking as the dancers. I mean, some of them are dancers just say, I've stopped dancing. Mm-hmm. But that woman had no dancing in her past life.
No. And so we get there and we're sitting there for a while.
I mean, even like
we're
trying
to find the booker. Like we're even like, who's the manager here? Blah blah blah. Nothing. We're just like sitting on the side tables of like a strip club, and then eventually they put the game on, and we're like, oh, okay. You know, like kind of picked me up a little bit. I was like, okay.
Then we tried to get a beer, and they had this weird policy about starting a tab where it's like, all right, we take your credit card. We charge a credit card $100, but when you're ready to cash out, you know, we'll subtract whatever it is, and then you just pay us. Mm-hmm. Something to which is the most wildest thing I ever seen in my life. I mean, most places they just, you know, if you start a tab, you hand over your credit card. That's it. You know, when you're ready to go, if you try to take off, it's like, I got your credit card, no problem.
Right.
But needless to say, we had to walk for probably about a full block, you know, trying to find something. We had to go, like, jump into, like, some kind of ShopRite, which happened to have an ATM in there.
Right.
So there was that. So we were getting pretty plastered before. I think we had about four or five drinks into us waiting. Yes. And it was supposed to start at 6, and there was nobody still in there. I mean, oh. Getting some moon music in here.
I'm getting us in the mood here.
All right. All right. So it's like we're looking around. It's like 6:15 comes around. I think there's like two ladies in the audience. It was just those weird things. It's like, well, when's this going on? I mean, the Super Bowl started like 6:23. I mean, our thought process is, all right, we're not going to see any entertainment with ladies, but hey, you know, we'll get this job done and we'll go watch the Super Bowl. I don't think we started until about 7 o'clock.
Oh, definitely.
When they finally had about 20 women in there. And
so
the three of us are just hammered.
So I'm asking, like, are we on the show? Like, me and Berlin, like, are we doing this? Johnny's like, yeah. Yeah, I guess he talked to him. And like, so
thank
it's
God.
It's about showtime. And I guess I bit the bullet and I was like, oh, I'll host. That was the worst idea ever. And you have to walk up. It was like a strip, you know,
it's
stage,
a little stage.
It was high. Yeah, it was high.
It's a big stage. There's four poles on there. It's like a stage meant for a couple, few girls to be up there dancing at the same time, you know, walking up to guys all around in a circle. And you know, and add to it, they didn't put the women, like, close by. They just patched them out wherever you want to sit. So that's one of the cardinal crimes of comedy.
So we're sitting there, like,
next to a male strip club.
Oh, man. Oh, my God. Like, I got to go up. And I go up, like, miserably. Like, I'm trying to work the audience and, like,
yeah,
be funny. And I'm not really working. Maybe a chuckle here and there. But it's like,
yeah,
you know. But I told Burla before I went on stage, I said, dude, if I'm struggling, I'm bringing you up in like 2 minutes. I don't care.
You went 3.5. Good for you.
No. I did about the 10, I guess, or whatever. And they're just not having it. They just want to see male dong. That's all they want. They want to see big, greasy men. And also before that.
let's be frank. I mean, think about it. If you and I go out to see some girls in a strip club and some male comedian is up there.
Female comedian.
Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? You know, unless you got like the best female comedian in the world, and even then, I'm not sure how well they could have done.
So I go up, I bomb, 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 and I bring up Berlew.
Yeah. And I'm pretty plastered. I think I forgot 3/4 of my set.
You did.
I'm just trying my best to work on stuff. I get a couple chuckles here and there, but it was really not worth it. And I'm trying to play around with the ladies, but the pinnacle of my night was when a female came up to the stage and she handed me $2. And she's like, "Here you go, baby, you know, but can you at least try to make me laugh?"
Yeah. A girl said to him, "Make me laugh." And there is nothing worse, dude. Yeah. Comedian than someone saying, "Please make me laugh." And then Berlew decides to, I guess the booze kicked in for a second, and he just tried to improv, trying to do anything. He was grasping for it. I give him credit for it a little bit. He gets.
I lay down on stage. And I'm making.
He lays down on this stripper stage on his back and is telling jokes with the microphone like up by his mouth.
Mm.
And it was even better to watch because now he was bombing on his back.
And I was like Kanye on Saturday Night Live.
Right, exactly.
He stole it from me, man. Mm. Yeah. I was thinking about doing something with the pole, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not sure how much that owner would appreciate that, you know. So
now he's been tested. He's HIV positive.
Well, only my back. My front side's okay.
Yeah. That's what you tell the girls.
Mm-hmm.
But oh my god, when I saw him go down on the ground and get on the stripper stage, I just lost it. I was like crying, and me and Johnny were sitting there like, "Oh my god, he's on the ground!" And then Johnny went out, and he did pretty good. Like, you know,
yeah, I mean, he did good. Of course. I mean, he's a freaking headliner, but yeah, I mean, that environment, you're not gonna win.
No. And it turned out like most of the crowd, like a lot of those women were strippers. Like they were strippers coming, I guess that's like day off to come see some male junk.
Yeah.
So as we're leaving, we're like, okay, it's time to go. Let's go watch the game somewhere. Let's go watch the game. But as we're getting up, all of a sudden you hear, "I'm proud to be an American. So
you know, we're about ready to go. Add to it, there's snow hitting Pennsylvania at the time.
It was pretty decently.
I mean, we're trying to figure out where to go to watch the Super Bowl. Johnny was insisting on going to Golden Corral. If you know Johnny Watson, he loves his Golden Corral, especially the breakfasts on Sunday. But as we're trying to figure out where to go, you know, we're just walking out. The male review is starting, and the men are coming up on stage, and they're all in formal military attire.
I think it was a fireman, a Navy guy.
I thought there was an Army guy.
Maybe an Army guy.
Yeah.
And so this is what we're hearing.
Yeah. And two male strippers are walking up together holding an American flag as this is happening.
Yep. And I'm not going to lie. I wanted to stay for like maybe five more minutes.
Yeah.
Just to see.
It's like, you know what? It's not gay. This is just awesome. There's not going to be another moment in my life where we're going to see this.
So this is what you hear. And they were announcing like the strippers like, "Here comes, ladies, a man in uniform, a man who defends his country with his dong, Lee Harvey." I don't know. Like, just like...
It was such a weird setup. I mean, it wasn't... I mean, they were just going up there. I mean, guys are building. You know, when they dance, the women love it. But it's like, it was almost like, what, is this President's Day?
It was
what?
Like a play.
Yeah.
And like, it was funny because I saw a bunch of them come in. And they would come in with their outfits, like a tuxedo bag. But the one guy was just looking at himself in the mirror like the whole night. And it was awesome.
Yeah.
And then they had shot boys. Mm-hmm. They had shot boys mm-hmm. instead of shot girls. Two dudes with their shirts off.
And we got them to shoot a promo for the Johnny Watson show.
It was funny. So we leave, and we go into Golden Corral, and Johnny Watson swears they have a TV.
Because
at this point, all we want to do is watch the game. Mm-hmm. I think it was like maybe half of the third quarter. Like, you know, we were about that much into the game. Yeah. And there's no TV. We're like, we're leaving.
Yeah.
And then we go to KFC.
Yeah.
Because the snow's starting to get bad.
Snow's getting really bad. It's like, we know we can't sit and watch the game. So we go to KFC, just shoveling food down our throats. I picked up about 20 hot sauce packets, and I remember you were questioning me about that.
Yeah, but yeah. Michael Berlow took like 37 hot sauce packets. But
some was for you.
No, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
But basically, we get back to Johnny's place, and the Super Bowl ended.
Yeah, the game was
over. That was our Super Bowl.
We didn't even see the last play. We had to see it in replay.
We had to hear it on the radio.
Yeah.
Because I remember being like, oh, interception! You know, I can't believe it.
We practically missed the entire Super Bowl.
That pretty much. I won money, though. A little bit.
Ah, that's good.
A little bit.
But, we declined the Super Bowl to see gyrating men playing tribute to America.
Yep, and they did a good job.
Let me tell you something. Everybody talks about that left shark in the Katy Perry halftime show. That guy's got nothing on Hunkamania.
Nope. Nothing. And we tried to ask them for the poster on the way out, and they wouldn't give it to us.
Yeah,
which is
sad.
Kind of sad.
But, You're saving it
yeah,
for
that
next
was
year.
That was Super Bowl Sunday, ladies and gentlemen. It was just this is what doing it is. Another comedy experience.
On a stripper stage.
But in the end, it was fun.
Yeah,
it's something experience. To talk to you about, something to talk about, and had a couple drinks, had a good time, and hey, Hunkamania.
And I got fluids on my back, probably.
Lance Burgundy. So the Monday after we did not the Monday after because we got snowed out, but on the Johnny Watson show we took Chips Cooney and made him the original comedian from
Hunkamania.
From Hunkamania, and it was pretty funny. Mm. I'm wondering if I could pull up some of the commercials, but in the meantime. Anyway, yesterday we went to an improv class.
Yes.
Michael Berlew. It was pretty good. Basically it was called Improv for Stand-Up Comedy, and it was done by Joey Novick, and it was good. I thought there was a little bit too much time. I'd rather just play the games and get into the scenes, because that's when you're having fun. You're doing the actual things that will make you better. And like I thought, maybe there was a lot of like too much talk, a little
too
bit
much
of name dropping
about stuff.
Like if you're there, you know what improv is. Like you know what exactly what improv is. Yeah. But overall, it was pretty fun. One game that I thought was fun was that ABC game. I thought that was really fun.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun doing that with Melissa Allen.
But. Basically, what you had to do, they would give you a scene, and you could only talk in the start of like the letter of the alphabet. So, like your first line would be A, the next person's line would be B, then back to C, D, blah, 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 blah. And I got a scene where I was folding laundry, and you got a scene where you were
cooking. I was at a restaurant, but after I was done, like I only did it for like 2 minutes, and I was just super into the scene, you know.
Yeah, it was fun. It was another way to be creative and whatnot. But improv is fun. Improv, I think that's kind of like when you strip it all down. Like improv is just fun. Like it's just fun
playing around. It's using your mind, but at the same time, you know, throwing out all the rules out the book.
Yeah. So we did that yesterday, but.
A lot of dirty stuff that happened during
I guess it was kind of a learning experience because it's the same thing like when you write and when you first get into comedy, you kind of navigate to dirty stuff.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense because the dirty stuff gets a cheap laugh. And, you know, and it's funny because like the things we did that weren't dirty were funnier, you know, like they were funny, you know. And overall, it was a good experience. Yeah,
you're not getting the cheap laugh. You know, you're earning that. So you're building the scene, and it's more appreciative.
So what we're going to do, Michael Berlew, right now, is we're going to play the ABC game.
Oh.
On air.
Oh, my.
Okay. So give us a scene, Michael.
Scene. we are at a water park.
We're at a water park. Okay. And we're going to try to just do this on the fly and just talk in ABCs. And, Berlew, you go first.
Amazing day today, ain't it?
Beautiful out. It's absolutely beautiful. The sun is shining. It's hot.
I can't wait till I get in the water, man. I know it's going to feel wonderful.
Did you see that woman that went down the water slide? Unreal.
Enormous woman. I can't believe she didn't get stuck in that tube.
Fat as hell. Just so freaking fat.
Girl, I mean, there needs to be a weight limit when you get on one of those things. I don't know why they let her on there.
Hold on, said the person at the top, like, you may break the slide. Like,
I was
you may
laughing my ass off when he told her that. Man, did you see the look she gave him?
Yeah. Just let me go. Just let me go down the slide. Just please. This is what I want. My family wants this. They need me to go on the slide.
Know what, lady? I don't want people who's in front of you to die because your fat ass is going to crash into them and they'll probably drown.
Love me. My husband will love me if I go down the slide and show him that I could walk on my own.
Manuel loves his fat women, but he doesn't love the fact that you might kill somebody and he has to pay for it.
No, he does. He doesn't love. He doesn't love anyone else. No, he does not love anyone else.
Oceans were built for fat women like her, okay?
Please. Please let me go down the slide. Please just let me go down. Look.
Quickly.
I'll sign a waiver.
Quickly. Quickly.
So, react to my pleads and just please sign. Let me sign the waiver and let me go down the slide. I know I'm fat. I know I'm enormous. But just please.
Scuba gear is required for the lifeguards, though. You'll probably just crash through the bottom and just sink everybody through the hole. They'll probably come through China.
The bottom line here is that I need to go down the slide to save my relationship.
Underwater activities are not your best fit, madam.
Violet was the color I chose for this suit because I want to look like a grape shooting out of a cannon.
Why would you pick a color like that? I mean, when you're that fat, you can't pick a hot color like that.
X-rayed, because when I was X-rayed, they told me that you can lose weight. Your bone capacity is not that high.
You need to lose a lot of weight, okay?
Just because... damn it!
You ruined the games, guys.
One letter to go! One letter to go! But... I was gonna say zebra was what I looked like, but whatever. I blew it. Yeah. I blew it.
Germany's dead.
That was what we kind of had to do, and that was fun. I thought that was my favorite game.
Yeah.
Just kind of being in the moment and keep going. But anyway, that was like an improv game, and guys we work with, Joe Carney and Rich McDonald, are great improv guys.
They're insane.
Guys.
I've seen them perform before. It's just amazing. I mean, it's interesting to talk to them, too. It's kind of funny how we did the class and people want to instantly go to, like, sex stuff. And they even kind of say, I mean, one of the things that they don't like, it's like you try to do a show and it's like instantly somebody's like, they do the game where you, like, pose them. They try to pose them, like, sex positions.
Right.
Like, you know, come on, guys. We can do more entertaining things than just a sex joke.
Right. So, Michael Berlew, Ghostbusters being cast with a female cast. What do you think about it?
If I liked the cast, I wouldn't mind. I mean, I like Kristen Wiig. I think she's kind of breakthrough as like one of the bigger female comedians out there. Mm-hmm. I despise Melissa McCarthy.
Yep.
Despise. I mean, I've heard she did pretty good during the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary. I heard she did a pretty good Chris Farley in tribute to him. But when I was in California, I was with a buddy. We were out there for training for work. And I'm a sports guy. He's kind of like a movie guy. And where we stayed, a movie theater was walking distance away. He's like, you know, I love movies. I'd love to go home all the time. I'm like, all right, you pick the movie. He picked Tammy. And that was the absolute worst movie I have ever sat through in my life.
Horrific.
It's just I mean, just her alone. The other two, I think the black girl from Saturday Night Live was cast. I don't remember.
I don't know.
I know. I think the black girl's from Saturday. And the other one, I don't know. I mean, if they have a good script, there's a prayer, but they're going to play the whole Melissa McCarthy act like the wacky fat woman. So it's going to be like, no.
The point of this conversation that I was trying to get to, we kind of talked about it on one podcast long before I even met you. Movies that can't be redone, which we're in a culture where everything's redone. Everything. And if you could redo it in threes, then people get excited. But my first question to you, we're going to kind of go through the genres here.
Okay.
So let's start with comedy, since that's what we pretend to be, comedians.
Mm-hmm.
What is a comedy that cannot be redone in your mind?
Comedy cannot be done. I'm going to say, I'm a fan of Bill Murray, so I'm either say Caddyshack or Groundhog Day.
I would say Caddyshack more.
Yeah.
Groundhog
Caddyshack 2.
yeah. But yeah, Caddyshack was more like, it's just so reflective of the time and the humor at the time. And the
Rodney was on his game. Ted Knight did a great role as a straight guy. Bill Murray playing a role. Aykroyd couldn't touch him, trying to redo his act. I mean, it was such a beautiful movie. I mean, it's
Can you imagine now it'd be like Seth Rogen, James Franco.
I would see Kevin Hart. I don't know why, but a brother can't be on the golf course?
Yep. So I just
that was a perfect Kevin Hart, by the way.
Well, it was perfect. It was flawless.
Yeah.
But I'm just picturing that like douchey chill you would get if you ever saw like that preview for like Caddyshack,
it's instantly just cringy.
Like where they just redo the storyline. I agree with you almost 100% there. No, I agree with you 100%, but I'm trying to think of another comedy. You know what? Like, I know it's modern, like modern-esque, but like the first Anchorman.
Like, I was 50-50 with Anchorman. See, I actually somewhat liked Anchorman 2 a little
bit. I never saw it yet. I still haven't yet to see it, but the first Anchorman had this weird like charm about it.
Yeah.
Where it was like getting those guys like not where they peaked yet, like where they were just all kind of like bubbling at the surface and they all threw their best performances out there. And it was one of those movies where I saw it the first time and was like, oh, it was funny. And then I watched it the second time. Really funny. And then you just catch on to
catch on to other stuff.
I could just see like down the line though, like Anchorman, just casting like
Chris Kattan.
And that's not even like a great example of like a comedy, but I just could see it. I could see them trying to cash in on some, or like Wayne's World with like two new guys. Wayne's World, when I was a kid, Wayne's World was the funniest movie to me ever. When I was a kid, and like I didn't even get the jokes at the time. Exactly. Like some of them I didn't get, like ribbed for her pleasure. I didn't even know what that meant, but I laughed. Now I know what it meant, and it's still funny. And, like, the first Wayne's World movie is still funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second one is not bad. It's not terrible. It's
not a train wreck.
It's not a train. But, like, Wayne's World was, like, my comedy growing up. Like, that was the movie I watched over and over again on the VHS rewind, blah, blah, blah. But, like, I became a huge Mike Myers fan from that. And then he obviously just went off the... Once the Love Guru
Shrek
came
out. Nothing else. Yeah.
But
and Dana Carvey, I was always a Dana Carvey
to me.
I remember his TV show. I thought it was hilarious. I was so pissed when it got canceled after the first season, and then his career disappeared. Man of Disguise. What was it? Master of Disguise. Yeah. Oh.
Those are like kids' movies, though. It's like they take these roles for the payday. But okay,
you know, it might be also a good one, Coming to America.
Oh my God. With Chris Hart, with Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
That would be.
I mean, Eddie Murphy killed that. Arsenio.
Or I could see them being like Tracy Morgan and Kevin Hart.
Yeah. James Earl Jones as the father. I mean, you appreciate guys playing the straight role when you look at that. And just his facial expression. So you just go.
That's
thank
such
you.
A good movie.
Yeah.
It's such a good movie. Or like.
Good morning. Hey, fuck you! Yes,
see,
yes!
I'm a big fan of the
you too!
The original Blues Brothers movie.
Oh, Blues Brothers 2000. I wanted to shoot somebody for making.
I was just gonna say they remade it already, but I could see them going back to it again.
I could see it
with Jimmy Fallon and Justin Timberlake.
Okay, I like Jimmy Fallon, but yeah, I could see.
Here's my thing with Jimmy Fallon. Like, I was never like a fan. But I appreciate the new take that his writers and him and that look they're trying to reinvent late night again, because late night's been stale for a long time.
Very much. That's
it's been
why
Letterman and Leno forever, and Conan. I still like Conan.
I like Conan too. He got a bum rap
with
the Tonight Show, but that was all with Leno. But
You know, Jimmy Fallon, I appreciate. That they're trying to do different things, and they are getting people who normally wouldn't tune in to tune in, and like they do funny bits, and Jimmy Fallon, whatever financial backing that show has, they are getting the biggest of the biggest on that show daily, like every day. You guys, Hanks and yeah. Will Ferrell and like guys doing fun. And I like that he puts them into spots where they do something funny.
Yeah, and you got to give him credit. Like when you watch a show, you can tell he's loving it and he's putting the effort into it. He's not phoning it in. It's not like his producer came up to him, hey, we're going to do a dance contest. All right, whatever. No, he's full on in, and you got to give him credit for that.
All right, next genre. All right, next genre. What is a drama that will never be made again? That should drama. Never be made again. Drama, see, that word could mean like almost anything. Like I'll go One, first. I'll go ahead. First. I don't know if it technically is a drama, but Goodfellas.
Concur, yeah. If Goodfellas, Godfather.
If they ever remake Goodfellas, I would just die.
Anything that's Tarantino, my, really. I mean, Reservoir Dogs.
Can you imagine, like, they're like Goodfellas with, like, oh my God, like Bradley Cooper.
Oh,
yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Playing, like, even just to touch that script, like, the brilliance of the conversation in that movie is. Those are lines that so many comedians now, like, you could recite those lines word for word, and they're still fun. Me and my best friend grew up watching Goodfellas, having sleepovers, and then when we discovered drinking, it didn't change. We had a couple beers and would watch Goodfellas.
Yeah. I mean, I think I brought up Reservoir Dogs. I couldn't imagine them doing. I mean, the simplicity of some of the lines, it's just like, I don't believe in tipping. I mean, and mm-hmm. I mean that's what makes a good drama, when you got a little comedy in there, you got a lot of tension, you have like general conversations, and yep. then just stuff happens.
That's what Tarantino's best, I think, when is the conversations he's able to create, mm-hmm. like through these morbid characters, like about normal stuff. Like you take like Pulp Fiction, when they're having conversations at the diner. Like mm-hmm. meanwhile, these guys have guns on them, and they're you know,
Quarter Pounder with cheese. Why? Yep. What? Who would think about, let's have a 10-minute conversation about that?
So mine would be Goodfellas. If you ever remade that, I would die.
I mean, I said Reservoir Dogs, Forrest Gump. I would. Tom Hanks nailed it. The CGI with him in the different scenes, that thing was nailed. I couldn't imagine. Like they would probably try to put some comedian in there who could imitate Forrest Gump.
Imagine they're like
Will Ferrell as Forrest Gump,
and then it's just like a clowny comedy. Yeah. Like, okay, what about a horror movie? That's a tough one.
I mean, that's tough because I was heartbroken watching Nightmare on Elm Street remake. I was a Freddy Krueger guy, and they just butchered that movie, for no pun intended. It was, one thing I will say. It's kind of sad how people got mad because they attempted a dark Nightmare on Elm Street like the first one and the third one was. Mm-hmm. And everybody was, oh, he wasn't playing around, blah, blah, blah. It's like, that's when it got shitty, when he was Freddy the stand-up comedian who kills you.
Yes.
I mean, almost everyone has been remade that, I mean.
All right, I'm going to throw mine out there.
Go ahead.
The Exorcist. The original Exorcist.
They did a reboot, though, didn't they?
I mean, they've had, like, the exorcism of, like, Emily Rose. Yeah. Maybe they did do it. But the original Exorcist still...
It's creepy.
It's creepy. It's got that weird psychological kind of scary to it.
I guess the only one I could think of that they haven't redone yet, and I'll even kind of preface it with, I wasn't a big fan when I watched it, was the Blair Witch Project. The original one where everybody in the world thought it was an actual real thing. I mean, I wasn't, when I watched it, I was like, eh, but I thought it was brilliantly done.
Yep.
I thought the acting was very good in it. But I kind of went into it like, I knew this wasn't a real situation. Some people thought that was like the actual tape.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the cops are going to release tape of people dying.
Yep. Yep.
But that's the only one I could think of that's not been remade. I guess they can't redo again. Case in point, Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the podcast. Well, next week we'll come back, talk about the Dover show a little bit. We'll see if we go back to the improv.
Well, we can't that Tuesday because we got the show with Rocco Romeo.
Yeah. We got the show with Rocco.
Abbe.
But other than that, our shows coming up are Ave on February 24th.
Yes, Somerset, New Jersey.
Somerset.
PG Mickey, show, people.
Mickey who?
Of course, on your birthday.
On my birthday at the Music Den birthday. In Randolph. And that's where we're going to wrap it up. So please follow us. Please listen to us on iTunes.
Go on that Twitter we don't like to do.
The Twitter, the
Facebook.
The Facebook, the Podbean, the Stitcher. Just help us out here, people.
And we're going to try to be doing some more stand-up shows afterwards. Try to do one in my area, but that's very premature. But
yep. Anyway, we're signing off here. Again, listen to Verbal Shenanigans. Keep the wind at your back. Life is funny. Laugh at it, people.
Bye, babies.